Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the show, we'll explore the public controversy over the presence of millions of undocumented immigrants here in the United States. Congress has not been able to agree on new regulations to approach solving some of the issues generated by illegal immigration across the Mexican border, so states are enacting their own laws concerning undocumented immigrants. This week, the Columbus Dispatch is publishing an investigative series on state-originated crackdowns on illegal immigrants. Dispatch reporters note that last year, states enacted 240 immigration laws, nearly triple the total enacted in 2006. The toughest law is now in effect in Oklahoma, and there's a proposed Ohio law that is modeled on the Oklahoma law. We'll find out more with the Dispatch reporters and photographers joining us in our studio. All of my guests are contributors to the Dispatch investigative series, American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown. Jill Riepenhoff is a Dispatch Press, a special projects reporter. Welcome.
Thank you.
Stephanie Chekolinski is editor of Fronteras, the Dispatch-owned Spanish language weekly. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Leonardo Carrizo is freelance photojournalist for Fronteras. Welcome. And Doral Chenoweth, the third, is a Dispatch photojournalist. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here, Fred.
And we're at 614-292-8513. Well, in Ohio, I guess a Quinnipiac survey said that a fair number of Ohioans consider undocumented immigrants to be a big problem. What did it say, Stephanie?
Well, it essentially said that yes, people think that it's a big problem, but they're pretty divided on what exactly to do about it. About half said that if people, you know, had been here working for 2 years, that we should, you know, find a way to help them stay legally. Mm-hmm. And the other half simply said, you know, perhaps these people need to go home if they're breaking the law. So it's pretty divided.
So it's pretty divided along those sentiments. Well, how many do we have an estimate? Undocumented immigrants are there estimated to be in Ohio? How many of them are Latino, have come across the border?
The best estimate comes from the Pew Hispanic Center, which basically crunches U.S. Census data. And their best guess in Ohio is about 145,000, somewhere mm-hmm. in that neighborhood. Could be more, could be less. Mm-hmm. No one really knows.
And of 145,000 undocumented immigrants here?
Correct.
And of that, do we know the percentage that are Latino who did come across that?
Those would be all, virtually all Latinos. Mm-hmm. How they got here is different ways. There could be some people here that are on that came with visas, and then their visas expired, mm-hmm. and so they are now technically illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. Some could have just snuck over the border, kind of the way most people think they get here.
Mm-hmm. To give you an idea of the percentage of illegal immigrants that are Hispanic across the country, we don't have good numbers in Ohio, but there's estimated 12 million illegal immigrants in the country currently, and 9 million of those are estimated Hispanic. That's a national number.
If we have 145,000 undocumented Hispanic residents here in Ohio, what's the total Hispanic population of Ohio, approximately? Do we know?
It's around 300,000.
Around 300,000. Mm-hmm. So almost half
Correct.
Would be undocumented.
Could be as many as half, is what the Pew is saying.
Yeah. But now, the title of the series is The Immigration Crackdown, but you say there haven't been, at least in terms of raids on employers who might be hiring undocumented immigrants, there have only been, what, four here in Ohio?
Correct.
That? Yeah. So is there, I mean, people may perceive some sort of difficulties in Ohio with undocumented immigrants, but what are the difficulties?
I think that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, kind of commonly called ICE, is the agency that enforces immigration law. Prior to a year ago, they really didn't have much of a presence in Ohio. And so they are certainly ramping up. They've gone from 8 to 40 agents. Their mission at this point is what they call targeted enforcement, where they are looking for people who have defied deportation orders. So that's kind of their mission right now. And they are definitely – deportations have tripled mm-hmm. in the past year.
About how many do we know?
The latest figures were about 3,300 have been deported so far this year. Last year there was 900.
Mm-hmm. But now there's a proposal for a pretty tough – immigration law here in Ohio, right? And how would that work? Who has proposed that? A certain state representative, and what would it hold?
Go ahead, Joe.
This bill has been introduced by State Representative Courtney Combs. He's from Butler County, which is an area that has seen a certain amount of controversy concerning illegal immigration. The bill kind of came bore out of some issues down there. Representative Combs told us that he basically just wants to get the debate started. Is there something that we can do to address this issue in Ohio? The issue, as we found out from sending reporter Todd Jones and Leo to Oklahoma, is that it's not as cut and dry as I think people would like it to be.
So this bill is modeled, Leo, on the Oklahoma law, and the Oklahoma law has had some interesting effects, also some unintended consequences, I guess, in terms of business. Business, the Chamber of Commerce, for example, in Oklahoma, doesn't support this very tough immigration law.
Correct. There's the main issue that's happening in Oklahoma, the consequences is fear on both sides of the aisle. The Hispanic community is in fear going out. People who are illegal immigrants are afraid of their neighbors because, you know, they're afraid they're going to be deported. And at the same time, the native, you know, the Caucasian population is also afraid of the impact that, you know, illegal immigrants have on their culture, on society, and work. So it's an issue. There's still the debate going back and forth, but they're just afraid of each other. And so it has divided the community of Tulsa, pretty much.
Hispanic immigrants are, I think, the series says about, 7% of the population in Oklahoma, right?
Something like that.
But a number of businesses have closed, and you talked to a number of businesses who said, look, we can't operate without, in fact, illegal immigrants, right?
Especially in the construction area, there's a lot of constructors that, you know, their crew are primarily made of Hispanic workers. And, you know, they say that I have tried to find other workers, American workers, and they don't last in the job site.
Even at good wages, they're saying.
Even at good wages, mm-hmm. Yes. At the same time, just to have both sides, we also have found, you know, because we try to be a very balanced reporting, a construction worker that says, well, the problem is not necessarily the illegal immigrants, it's that we're being outbid by the contractors. They're greed, in other words. It's what, you know, taking the Americans' jobs away instead of contracting somebody who is American for a good wage, they're paying less to Hispanics. So that's a controversy.
So the idea is some people are saying, well, look, American contractors know they can get away with paying less to illegal Hispanic immigrants, so they're going to bid down, and therefore if that competition wasn't there, you could have higher wages and American workers to take the jobs, right? But other people you talked to said that was a myth, that it wasn't true, that they were paying good wages to the construction and other workers.
Yeah, so the thing is, it comes down to saying that, you know, some contractors say that, well, we're not going to find workers if we don't take these illegal immigrants to do the jobs. And on the other side, there's other contractors say, well, if you pay Americans the normal wage, you will find them and you will have them. So you don't need to hire illegal immigrants. So the debate, it goes back and forth.
The debate continues on. But is it true to say that the business community in Oklahoma generally does not support this very tough law down there? Chamber of Commerce doesn't support it?
The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce does not support it. There's been an area, a mall, that was predominantly used by Hispanic businesses in the area. And since the law was enacted, they saw a precipitous drop in their business, and some of those businesses had closed. Mm-hmm. So that Chamber of Commerce specifically does not support this law.
Leo, you visited a small restaurant, I guess near Tulsa. You didn't identify where it was. I guess they didn't want to be identified, but owned by a woman who said she was a conservative Republican.
Yes.
And at the same time, she said, it wasn't clear to me from what she said whether she had a number of Hispanic people working for her, but it wasn't clear to me from what she said whether they were legal or illegal.
Some were illegal.
Some were illegal. And she said, I couldn't do my business without it.
Exactly. And the relationship that she has with the people who work is beyond just a business relationship. They have worked with her for over 8 years. Their family members are integrated and working for her restaurant, so they have a help and support each other in good times and bad times. So from her perspective, not only she has, you know, loyal workers, but she also has made friendship, you know, with the people, because she sees their intentions, you know, to work and do better in their lives and mm-hmm. so forth. So that's for her, even though she is a conservative Republican, she feels that, you know, the fault here is that the government has not found a way to make these people legal. It's not because they don't want to become legal. The fact is that they do want to become legal aliens, but they have many obstacles and they haven't figured out what's the best way to become legal once they are here. So that's also part of the issue.
Some of the people that all of you talk to in Oklahoma and here, some of the illegal Hispanic immigrants, had that concern. They said, we would like to be legal, but there are just so many barriers and it's so difficult. Can we talk about that a little, Stephanie?
Certainly. One of the people that we interviewed on our day one story that ran on Sunday, we spoke with a waitress who's been here about a year. She applied for a visa twice before coming as an undocumented immigrant. She was denied twice. And her dream is to attend college here at the university. But, you know, until there's a way for her to become legal, that she won't be able to do that here.
You know, she just wanted to live the American dream. That's one thing that I remember about her. And mm-hmm. I photographed her. She wants to be able to spend the weekend shopping and she wants to go to college. And she works 6 days a week and just wants so much. And her story about coming up from Central America to Columbus was just, it warmed my heart, and yet it was, you know, it was just an incredibly rough journey that she had to get here.
Dangerous and difficult journey. Yeah.
And she succeeded. I mean, and she's basically did the journey by herself.
Mm-hmm. Darrell, I noticed your photos do not show her face. Right?
Yeah, she was one person who requested that we not show her face for obvious reasons. And so we worked around that as best we could, and she drove home from work one day, and I was with her, and I was able to get that photo that you see on the Insight cover of her. Just kind of shot her through the rearview mirror of her car, and so that worked, I think, to protect her and yet kind of show her in the American environment.
Of course, here's the part of the heart of the controversy, and that some people would say, well, look, if she tried to get in legally and couldn't get in legally and just couldn't make it, then she shouldn't be here at all, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people were saying, some people.
And she's very conscious of that. She certainly knows that she's breaking the law. And that is something that she's concerned with. She doesn't want to, but I think she felt that the economic reality. She's college educated. She worked as a loan officer in El Salvador, and she, when the credit crisis hit here, it also affected the economy there, and the economic reality was not good for her there, and so she came here, and now she's working as a waitress. But to be fair, there are individuals who come here and do benefit from the fact that they can live anonymously, that they can make, they can essentially create an identity because there are no IDs that people can get who are undocumented. They can, you know, change their names as they like. Mm-hmm. And there are people who, you know, not everyone is here to contribute. There are people who are here that break the law. We have some people that commit felonies and things like that. Yeah. And they bring up a whole set of other issues.
Sure. But this woman is very industrious, as you point out, almost middle class in El Salvador.
Yes.
Right before the economic crunch hit. And then it went to pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. President Bush, in his proposal for the law, and maybe Senator McCain's bill as well, did they not have a means by which people such as Maria, this woman from El Salvador that you profile, could more expeditiously get across the border legally and get a work permit, right, for a number of years?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. But that measure failed, obviously. And also, I think part of the problem with that bill, at least from what we heard from, you know, one side of this whole issue, was that it was amnesty. And I don't think, you know, sort of everything that we've seen, that amnesty is favored, embraced by the majority of Americans. So it's very complicated.
Sure.
what happens, because anything you do, any sort of conditions you put, well, you can stay if you've done this, that, or the other thing. You can call it anything you want, but the bottom line is that it is amnesty, and I think that's where everything breaks down with this.
Mm-hmm. We're with Columbus Dispatch journalists, photojournalists with us this hour, all contributors to the current series that started Sunday in the Dispatch and runs through Wednesday, called American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown. Doral Chenoweth, the third Dispatch photojournalist. Leonardo Carrizo, freelance photojournalist for Fronteras, the Dispatch owned Spanish language weekly. And Stephanie Chekolinski, the editor of Fronteras. Joe Riepenhoff, Dispatch special projects reporter. If you have questions about the series or about some of these issues in general, 614-292-8513. You can email a comment or question to openline@wosu.org. As you point out, though, Stephanie, you know, not all the illegal immigrants are here to be productive. And I think that also concerns people. In the series, you write that the state of Virginia this year found more than 170 illegal immigrants on its they have them on their sex offender registry this year.
That's true. And Jill can probably speak better on that because she was the one that found that fact.
It was just sort of kind of part of their crackdown, I think, in Virginia, and they just started looking. And what an obvious place to look on the sex offender registry. Who are these people? And I thought that was kind of a shocking detail. The other thing that most people probably don't know and should know, even immigrants who are here with legal status, they came, they have a visa, whatnot, if you commit a felony crime, a felony of moral turpitude, such as a sex crime, you will be deported back to your home country. You lose your right to stay in the United States. So I think that just shows sort of the challenges that the immigration agents face, is that, you know, there are just all these people all over the place, and trying to wrap your hands around, your arms around where they are is quite difficult.
But you say if somebody commits that kind of offense, they'll be deported.
Correct.
But how come? I wonder then why the 170 illegal immigrants on the sex offender registry list, why they're on the sex offender registry list, why they weren't all deported?
Because I don't think that wherever they were convicted, there hasn't been this sense by local law enforcement, by the local cops, the local courts, the state prison systems, to check with immigration agents, is this person here legally? Mm-hmm. I think that is now changing. They are definitely local police and courts are certainly getting dialed into the fact that they can call ICE at any time and say, we have this person in custody, or we've just convicted this person. Does this what is the status of the visa? And that's why you're seeing a lot more deportations, because I think the local police are getting involved, more calling, and it's having an impact.
What authority actually do local law enforcement officials have in terms of, clearly if a crime is committed, they can take care of that. But other than that, they've got to work with ICE, right? They've got to work with the federal agency, huh?
Unless they have what's called a 287G status, and that means that the agency would have gone through a special training with the federal government to be able to enforce immigration violations. The only sheriff's department in the state of Ohio, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Butler County that has that status. So here in Franklin County, they don't have jurisdiction to enforce immigration laws. And in many cases, quite frankly, I don't think that they have the resources or the time to do that.
They may not want to do it.
No.
Some local agencies have expressed, I think, a hesitancy to want to get into that, right?
Yeah. Immigration is the jurisdiction of the federal government. And so when local law enforcement agencies get involved, they are taking on something something extra, certainly.
So if a local police officer discovers an immigrant who turns out to be here undocumented illegally, if they haven't committed a crime, there's really nothing. They're not empowered to hold them or do anything. Is that right?
If they haven't been charged with a crime.
If they haven't been charged with a crime, I've dropped it.
But if they're charged with a crime as minor as driving without a driver's license or making an illegal turn, they can be taken into custody for identification because undocumented persons don't have legal Ohio driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. And to do that, they contact ICE, and ICE says, you know, what tells them what their status is, and then the federal government can get involved and pick them up.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Social Security cards and Social Security contributions from immigrants who are here undocumented. An awful lot of money, right, has gone into the Social Security Trust Fund based on the work of undocumented immigrants, and it's sitting there, right? And why does it sit there, Jill?
Well, it is a fund that if somebody's name or number is off a digit, say I got married and forgot to tell the Social Security number, when the Social Security Administration, when they get my earnings report, it says it's going to a name and a number that don't match. So they put it in a fund and say, well, we're just going to set it over here until we can confirm that this indeed is one and the same person. So that's how the fund has been created. There's been a typo or whatnot. But most of the, I mean, the bulk of the money now is just rolling in from the late 90s on, which is, you know, sort of a the show of the wave of immigration. How immigrants end up with Social Security numbers, if you're here legally, you could be entitled to have a Social Security number. If you're illegal, you can, you know, invent them, use your American-born children's Social Security card. You can steal them. You can borrow them. There's all kinds of different things. When those earnings reports go to the Social Security Administration from your employer and it shows a name and a number that doesn't match, they shove that money into a fund and say, okay, we'll put it over here in case there's ever a match made, and mm-hmm. then you'll credit. But, of course, in those cases, there never will be a match made.
And is it $586 billion with a B dollars billion. In this special fund now?
Billion.
Billion. Okay.
Billion.
And by the way, you profile a fellow whose Social Security number has been used a number of times by a number of different people in a number of different states, right? I mean, do these
Correct.
Numbers circulate? I mean, your number or my number, our Social Security numbers, could now be being used somewhere without our knowledge by an illegal immigrant, right?
Correct. We subscribe to a public record service that searches the country and rolls all these public records together to build a profile on somebody. And we found this gentleman in Oregon. I was actually looking for one of the immigrants from Columbus. And because of the common Social Security number, it linked to the guy in Oregon who then had all these different people using his Social Security number.
Without his knowledge, obviously.
Without his knowledge. We called him. He was surprised, but not completely surprised, because about 5 years ago, somebody was trying to use his Social Security number at that point. It does not affect his credit. Mm-hmm. Basically, what's happening, our theory is that people are using this to gain employment. They're yeah. using his Social Security number.
Not to get a MasterCard and run up debts or something.
Correct.
They're using it to get a job.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And so assuming that is the way that plays out, so then like Adrian in Dublin or Columbus, his earnings report would be submitted to the Social Security Administration with Buddy Birdwell's Social Security number. They don't match, so they just toss all mm-hmm. of his earnings.
Buddy's the guy in Oregon, yeah.
Into the fund. It doesn't go on to Buddy's. It doesn't help yeah. Buddy either.
And the reason that this can happen, you're right, is because the different federal agencies are not able, by law, because of privacy legislation, to coordinate all these numbers with one another, right?
Correct. I think the Department of Homeland Security has really been the one sort of pushing for this for obvious reasons. I mean, it gives them essentially a huge tip sheet of people that potentially are illegal immigrants. And I think
they're pushing for it to
allow access yeah. to Social Security and IRS databases. Mm-hmm. And the IRS and Social Security say there's legitimate reasons why we can't let this happen. So there's been much debate over this, but no resolution.
Part of the problem, too, is that they can't tell you that your Social Security number is being used. If I go to the Social Security Administration and say, hey, could you run a query with my SSN and see, you know, if anybody else is using it, they, because of the privacy laws, won't be able to tell me if someone mm-hmm. else has been using my
but
Social
the dispatch
Security.
Can find out for me, apparently.
Yes.
You've got this database, right? You're able to figure it out. You can put it together.
Right. Right.
Okay. We're talking with reporters and photographers from the Columbus Dispatch and from the Dispatch-owned Spanish language weekly Fronteras about the series now appearing in both newspapers, American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown. We're going to be back after these messages at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day.
What is this?
I don't know.
Amy Thompson taught children with autism.
But her work took on a whole new dimension when she became the mother of an autistic son.
He knows when I'm having a difficult time. He'll come put his arms around me and he'll say, Mama, I love you.
One mom's fight for her autistic child.
I've never seen that side of autism, that capacity to love somebody fully.
Next time on Day to Day.
That's coming up on Day to Day in 30 minutes. It begins at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jarovich, and it's 73 degrees at 11:30. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Here are today's big stories put in perspective on All Things Considered. Hosts Robert Siegel, Michelle Norris, Melissa Block, and WOSU's Christina Morgan present a mix of news, interviews, commentaries, reviews, and offbeat features. Listen to All Things Considered, weekdays starting at 4, now on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music. And you can listen to Open Line with Fred Anderle where you want and when you want with the Open Line podcast. Search Open Line at the iTunes Music Store to download each program to your iPod or MP3 device. In the weather forecast for today, sunny skies and a high of 82, a nice day today. Clouds move in tonight, bringing a chance of rain and a low of 58. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. My guests are contributors to the current Columbus Dispatch investigative series, American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown. It started appearing in the paper Sunday, and it will run through Wednesday. Jill Riepenhoff, a Dispatch Special Project reporter, is with us. Stephanie Chekolinski, editor of Fronteras, the Dispatch-owned Spanish-language weekly. Leonardo Carrizo, a freelance photojournalist with Fronteras. Doral Chenoweth III, a Columbus Dispatch photojournalist. 614-292-8513. Let's go to you callers. Dan is on the line. Hi, Dan.
Yes, good morning. I am concerned in any discussion of immigration to the United States that the cause of the increase in immigration is never mentioned. And there has been a gradual increase in immigration, the reason being in large part because of international trade. As international trade restrictions are loosened, we have a lot of companies, most of them U.S. companies, in countries south of our border. That, and particularly two examples are parts manufacturing and agribusiness, that pretty much take over local economies in countries where there might have been subsistence farming or whatever, and all of those traditional economic activities, the traditional farming, are wiped out. Then, if a layoff occurs, or if in fact the standard of living is reduced, as sometimes happens, because of the new enterprises, of course, people are going to go where they can find better-paying jobs, or maybe a job, period.
Mm-hmm.
And often that means the United States. Now, what I don't understand, and please try to clarify this for me, is why that is not being addressed. I think there would be one very direct solution to the problem, which is to require that American employers do sign up people for Social Security and unemployment insurance and so forth in a legal manner. I don't think that documentation of immigration should be a part of that system, but require that certain minimum wage and certain benefits be supplied to these people. Let the market then take over. If employers still consider it worthwhile to hire immigrants, then A, those immigrants would have a decent, safe working environment, mm-hmm. and B, that would give people a chance then to contact them, to identify them for real, and then work out their immigration status. So right now it seems to me like a problem which is caused by trade policy, our policymakers, and B, by American employers working up here and south of the border, is the burden is being placed on the immigrant, which, you know, on the worker, which doesn't seem to me humane and doesn't seem to me effective.
Well, Stephanie, your response.
We did, in fact, speak with a union up in the Toledo area. It's called the Farm Labor Organizing Committee. And Baldemar Velasquez, the president of that union, works on both sides of the border, as you spoke of, unionizing immigrant labor, specifically people who work in agribusiness. And that was his point as well, that he would completely agree with you that as the restrictions on businesses internationally have decreased, American companies are competing directly with small farms in terms of agribusiness on the other side of the border. And so a small farmer in, you know, Oaxaca can't compete with a large agribusiness in the United States. Their market dries up. They're left without jobs. They emigrate to urban centers in Mexico first, and then from there, when they don't find work, they usually come to the United States. So it is being discussed. What's interesting about Flock is that he's unionizing. He's also affiliated with the AFL-CIO, which has had some interesting opinions about immigration as well. So I think that he would certainly agree with you.
I think this also speaks, Dan's points speak to what your series is covering here, which is that in the absence of federal legislation, you know, to deal with all these issues and regularize situations, states are coming to the forefront with laws that may be well-advised or ill-advised, but nonetheless, nobody's dealing with this comprehensively, right, on the federal level.
It's a very hot issue.
Yeah.
Politically.
And what you end up with, then, is a patchwork of different laws across the states on an issue that everybody agrees is federal jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So it's very insane, excuse me, where Oklahoma has a very restrictive law in the books. Illinois, on the other hand, has said we're not doing any of this nonsense. I mean, that's kind of their take. We're going to let, you know, we're just going to let it ride and let the federal government figure it out. So you've got one state that's cracking down and another state saying, nope, not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. So, Dan, the kind of legislation you're talking about or the kind of regularization you're talking about would seem to await a federal response, huh?
It would be a federal response, and in the interim, and less than until a comprehensive package can be approved, I think the states should take a hands-off approach to this. And as a matter of general policy, we should be addressing the source of the problem instead of the symptom, which is how this affects the workers who come up here. And by the way, most undocumented immigrants are very hard-working people who come and basically in the mold of the American dream. Go read the poem on the Statue of Liberty. It's very inspiring. And the crimes that Lou Dobbs and people like that love to focus on are not disproportionately high among the immigrant community. I mean, you turn on the local news anytime in Columbus and read about the crime rate among our so-called native population. So I just think that the whole focus needs to change.
A, all right, Dan, got to move on.
To where it belongs, and B, to where it's more humane.
Thanks for your call. Jill, you were nodding your head, I think, in agreement there when Dan said that the crime rate among illegal immigrants is no higher than it is among...
That was one of the things that we specifically looked at, and without sort of giving away the punchline to the story, that'll be on day four. But it was pretty surprising what we found, that Latinos are not committing the kinds of crimes that people think, sort of the myth. That is very much not the case, at least not that.
Crimes in no greater proportion than the people those who were born here and live here.
They just flat are not committing the violent crimes in Franklin County.
In general, they're not.
In general,
they're not.
They are not. They are not responsible for, you know, murders, rapes, homicides. Now, have they committed some? Yeah. But not at the proportion of blacks, whites, et cetera.
Who were born here and have lived here all their lives.
Right, right.
Interesting. That's quite a myth, then. I mean, there's something perpetuated by some journalists, so-called journalists, Lou Dobbs, CNN, et cetera. Right?
Right. That was one of the things that I set out to do. I'm like, okay, let's look at this. And there's real data. I mean, we could really look at it. And I looked at 5 years worth of arrest, of booking data at mm-hmm. the Franklin County Jail. So it is not what people think.
And fear may lead people to think that it might be a higher rate of violent crime among immigrants. Is there some racism involved here, too? Because, Leo, you know, you and the reporter with you visited a meeting of a group. I know the acronym is IRON. I'm not remembering.
Yeah, Immigration Reform for Oklahoma Now.
Yeah, and one woman there said to you, quote, "Children, children, children, we Caucasians are not. Pretty soon, immigrants are having children, children, children. We Caucasians are not. Pretty soon they're going to outnumber us. That's what they're working on." Quote.
It's very scary to kind of hear that type of rhetoric. But the people nonetheless have this fear that, you know, the Hispanic have a plan to, you know, to reproduce and, you know, take control of the U.S. somehow, which makes no sense. But, you know, it's because it's part of their fear, you know, that's causing them to group and to just, you know, try to protect to themselves and to keep to themselves, which doesn't allow them to, you know, cross over and kind of learn a little bit more of the real facts that are going on. Mm-hmm. So then people just stay together within their own group.
Sure. But that's part of the American fabric. I mean, the waves of Irish immigrants were disliked by those who were here, Italian immigrants the same way. And so now it's just happening to the Hispanic immigrants as well. So.
Earl, I think that's a really good point. I mean, because you heard the same stories, the same myths about Irish immigrants, about immigrants from Eastern Europe, about Italian immigrants, you know, that somehow they were going to commit more crimes than the British immigrants or something. And it was, in no case was that true. And you're hearing the same thing now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sure are.
Yeah.
I think, though, that on some level, she's correct. The birth rate, especially in Franklin County, among Hispanics, far outpaces the birth rate amongst whites and blacks. And I think we just saw a new census data that said by 2042, you know, the demographics are going to change in the United States. We're in the midst of a change, and people are, you know, afraid.
I think that's a correct response, but the fear impulse comes in with her statement. That's what they're working on. There's a subconscious intent here to
conspiratorial reproduction is what she's accusing them of.
I've not heard that phrase before, conspiratorial reproduction. That's a good
Feel
one.
Feel free to reproduce.
Our next caller is Gene. Hello, Gene.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to call to say that I agree with the previous caller when this previous caller says that we must attack the source of the problem as far as illegal immigration goes. But when the federal government fails to perform its function, then I see it as a duty for the states to take that up. Besides that, we have people who are waiting in line trying to come into this country too. Now, and that's great, you know, but, you know, people who come here, many people come here, see this as once they're here, they see it as an entitlement. What they don't understand is that the United States was founded on laws and legal systems, and they seem to lack an appreciation for the fact, even though they benefit from the law, they seem to lack, you know, seem to have a lack of appreciation of following the law, and I think that's the source of the problem, you know, that people have with illegal immigrants. Now nobody, you know, and then you have to make a distinction between legal immigrants and immigrants. Okay, some people try to make this in a one big group. You know, you're anti-immigrant. And they forget the fact that, you know, that a person who comes here illegally or, you know, is not supposed to be here.
Hmm. Well, so, I think, Gene, I think, panel, you'd agree that our caller is articulating, you know, significant concerns that a certain percentage of the public, a large percentage of the American public have about illegal immigration, right?
Certainly. And it is an irony. In many cases, people are coming here. They're entering the country illegally because they seek to live under the laws in the United States, and they do realize that there is an irony there. I think plenty of people realize that, you know, that they can only follow the law up to a certain point, and that they have broken the law by entering illegally. What people told us was essentially, but I didn't have a choice. And so perhaps that's how they rationalize. And I think the caller does have a good point that you can't group all immigrants together and say, oh, well, these people are immigrants, they must agree on illegal immigration. There are people who've entered the country legally who have very strong feelings against illegal immigration. They don't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And so it is not a homogenous group. He's right. Yeah.
Gene, thanks for your views today. So, indeed, there are consequences, also you point out in the series, for the lives of people who are hard workers who have come here illegally. There are everyday consequences for them as well. I mean, things they have to avoid, things they can't do. They're afraid they're going to be discovered, right? They have to work around. A lot of workarounds here they have to do. Is that right?
Absolutely. We couldn't name anybody in the paper for fear of, you know, sort of outing them, if you will. They are very, very skeptical. They are fearful when they're driving. But it also is that way for the legal immigrant community as well. They're afraid because of the color of their skin that they're going to get pulled over for some minor traffic infraction and then end up in some, you know, mess to untangle. It's a problem all the way around.
You found that, Leo, to be true in Oklahoma as well. The immigrants who were legally here also had...
Yeah, and also in relation to their families, because you might have a lot of family members, some might be legal, some might be illegal, and therefore, you know, if you're trying to keep your family together, how do you adjust? And you have to be ready in case your illegal family member gets picked up, then the whole family has to move on how they're going to react. So the family ties in relation to being illegal and some legals also puts a lot of pressure on the people in Tulsa. That happened a lot.
We have an email here from Pav. He says, please ask the reporters how illegal aliens, his word, on probation are supposed to support themselves. Last week's Dispatch article on cockfighting mentioned one illegal alien who had previously been arrested in 2006, and Judge Hale gave him probation and a probation officer to report to. He's identifying a blogger here, Jose, who says that 60% of area Hispanics are illegal. So the other Hispanics in the same household would most likely be illegal also. What do they think a grown man who's not working is going to do all day long? How is he going to support himself legally?
Well, if he's illegal, he's not going to support himself legally. Because since 1986, it's been illegal to hire someone who's undocumented. So I'm not completely familiar with the specifics of that story. But he does point out that within our court system, there are people who are illegal that are passing through the court system, and some of them, depending on which police officers they come in contact with or which officers in the court they come in contact with, will be deported, while others will not. And in some cases, that leads to very uneven enforcement, if you will. People who are felons may end up staying in the country, going through the court system, and while people who are traffic violators are going to end up deported.
You know, all of what you're saying today seems to cry out for some national regularizing legislation, right? I mean, which was the attempt. I mean, Senator McCain's attempt and other people's attempt to do this. And, of course, as our previous caller pointed out, he feels it's the obligation of the state then to legislate if the federal government will not. And, of course, that could be true. But nonetheless, what a mess, huh?
It is not an easy issue by any means. Part of the problem is there's just a complete lack of information. It is very difficult to document. School systems are not allowed to ask people their status. Mm-hmm. So they really have no idea. And just because a child speaks Spanish does not mean that that child is illegal. It could be that that's just the language of their parents, so that's why they're taking an English as a second language class. That child absolutely could be a citizen. So we don't even know amongst, like, children in school how many are legal or illegal. They're not allowed to ask.
And they're not allowed because why?
Because that's a U.S. Constitutional ruling from decades ago. Mm-hmm. It's an old one. Hospitals, same thing. They are not allowed to ask immigration status. So we have no idea how many people are being treated in emergency rooms that are here illegally. Certainly, there's gobs of information about the numbers of people who are being treated in emergency rooms without insurance. And a large part of the illegal immigration population falls into that because they don't have health insurance at work. Mm-hmm. But again, trying to extrapolate and figure out and document the economic impact is virtually impossible.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with reporters and photographers from the Columbus Dispatch and from Fronteras, the Dispatch-owned Spanish-language weekly. Starting this Sunday in the Dispatch, you may have been reading their a series, American Divide, the Immigration Crackdown. Jill Riepenhoff is a Dispatch Special Projects reporter. Stephanie Chekolinski, editor of Fronteras. Leonardo Carrizo, freelance photojournalist with working for Fronteras. Doral Chenoweth III, Columbus Dispatch photographer, 614-292-8513. Larry, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I was wondering, the guest who was talking about the Social Security Fund, that all this money that doesn't go back to the illegals through their Social Security, would you say it was 30?
$586 billion, right?
Correct.
$86 billion. Is it in a fund that's static, that's not being used, or is it being used as part of the Social Security payout?
No, it is in a static fund. They cannot spend that money because if they make a match, if 10 years from now they discover that they've somehow messed up your earnings report, for example, then you'll be credited that. So they can't spend that money. They can spend the interest off of it, which I'm not sure how much interest is on $586 billion, but I'm sure it's a lot.
So it's in essence subsidizing the Social Security system with the interest.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I would suggest that that's a good story for Mr. Riepenhoff.
Jill Riepenhoff, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd look into that.
Okay, Larry, thanks. Thanks for your call. Tom is next here. Tom, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. I just have my own analysis on this whole thing. I think it is that if it were only business involved, there wouldn't be a so-called immigration problem or illegal alien problem, because business benefits all the way around. It's interesting that in both articles so far, the chambers of commerce are the ones going to bat, and you can bet they're not going to bat to raise labor wages. That they benefit both those who are willing to exploit the workers' benefit in that way, and the more workers they can bring in, legal or illegal, it increases the supply of labor, which somebody in the article said it wasn't because we're exploiting them. That's all done by supply and demand. Well, you increase the supply and you can keep the wages down and hurt labor, help business. And I believe that the reason that we have a problem and it's a continuing problem is because that's the way the people who run things want it. The only problem is that those people who feel that way also have a constituency made up of xenophobes and people who are fearful of minorities outnumbering them, et cetera, et cetera. So they have to try to keep those xenophobic people happy while maintaining the status quo and keeping the labor supply up. That's my view on the thing, and I'll listen off to the phone.
Tom, thanks. Interesting analysis. What do you think?
Clearly, business has been let me back up. In the late 90s, there was a fairly infamous raid of the onion harvest fields in Georgia. And there was all kinds of illegal immigrants that were snatched up in the raids. It pretty much put like a $2 billion crop in jeopardy. Well, the screaming started immediately and went, you know, all the way to Washington. That, in effect, stopped all sort of worksite enforcement at that point in time. And employers have basically been given a bye since then. Things are starting to change. ICE is certainly doing many more raids of employers. There's been some very high-profile ones. There was one in Iowa not too long ago at a meatpacking plant. So certainly the employers and businesses have not been in favor of changing things. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been an advocate for not doing some things that the federal government says will help crack down. But business has definitely not shown that it's behind enforcement. That's not to say that the chamber doesn't want reforms as well. I think that's the bottom line, that everybody all around says the system is messed up and needs to be reformed, including the illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm.
Everybody agrees something consistent needs to be done here. Yeah. The law in Oklahoma, upon which this one Ohio law introduced by Representative Courtney Combs, some people think it's very draconian. For example, I think, Leo, you ran across a church that sold its van because under the Oklahoma law, if they were transporting people somewhere in the van for a church activity, it's illegal to transport somebody who is illegally in the country, and they felt that they could be arrested. There's even, I think, a jail term connected with it.
Oh, there's a lot of ambiguity on this part of the transportation of illegal immigrants, because then who is, you know, if you're taking somebody to a hospital because of a car accident, or this church is taking, you know, people to prayer, if they're going to be, you know, under a felony charge because, you know, they're transporting people. So there's misconceptions within the law and the mm-hmm. details, and not everybody's aware. And at the same time, the people who are enforcing it are not necessarily aware of all the details. So the way the law is written, and then the way it's implemented once it goes down to the ground, you know, people don't know exactly what are the rules. You
know
who can
saying.
Take yeah. somebody who is transporting illegal immigrants, who is not, you know, transporting.
Yeah, I talked to a Columbus minister about the law in Oklahoma and how it might be coming here to Ohio. And this was a minister who worked a lot with the Latino population, worked a lot with people of very low income. And she was aware of the Oklahoma law and said, bring it on. You know, she's ready to challenge it here mm-hmm. in Ohio. And she will not stop her type of ministry because of this law.
Well, the reporter that spoke with the gentleman who was concerned about picking people up and taking them to church asked State Representative Randy Terrell if that would be considered a felony. And what Terrell said was that if it's for religious, humanitarian purposes, then they would not violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was written with some ambiguity on purpose to make it more humanitarian. The problem is that people working with the community say that ambiguity has simply caused confusion and fear. And so, you know, who knows how the law is going to be applied.
Other proposed laws in Ohio, House Bill 477, all official state business would be conducted in English, right?
Correct.
House Bill 409, commercial driving tests would be given in English. And Senate Bill 260, local law enforcement authority, it would give local law enforcement authority the power to enforce federal immigration law. So those are some of the other possibilities on the books here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the series is running in the Dispatch now through Wednesday, and Stephanie, it's going to be running in Fronteras, the weekly Spanish language paper, is that right?
It's on the website in Spanish now, but if people want to read it in print in Spanish, they can pick up a copy of Fronteras. It'll be in there for the next 4 weeks.
Okay, the next 4 weeks or so. Thank you for being here. Stephanie Chekolinski, editor of Fronteras. Good to have you here.
Thank
Joe
you.
Joe Riepenhaus, Dispatch Special Projects Reporter. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Leonardo Carrizo, freelance photojournalist. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Gerald Chenoweth III, Dispatch Photographer. Good to have you here.
Always
well
a pleasure.
Today. And the news is next on WOSU 820. We're listening to support at WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820. NPR News.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on WOSU comes from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher education faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at OHEA.org.